all the lights started to go off. And it was on a timer. So one by one, it was like click, boom, click, click, click. And then all of a sudden, we're in complete darkness. We're yelling, going like, yo, yo, we're still in here. But it's automated. And so from 4 a.m. to 6 a.m., we did this as a team in darkness. And so I got to say, that was about as mean as you can get. I remember thinking like we needed this.
What you just heard was a snippet from an interview with Ed Veal, who did a pretty gonzo ride on a trainer going after a virtual 24-hour record. We will hear more from him in a second. Welcome to the Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast. I'm Matthew Piaro, editor, and with me is Matt Stetson, photo editor, photographer extraordinaire. How's it going, Matt?
Good, thanks, Matt. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. I'm stoked for CrossNats, which is coming up in mere hours after this podcast lands. What are your predictions? Do you have any predictions for Cyclocross Nationals?
Well, it's an exciting year. I know Michael Vandenham's going for his hat trick, 3 in a row, which would be pretty impressive.
Other people to watch at Nationals are Ruby West going for a 4th under 23 title. Oh, back in the elite women's race, we have Magalie, of course, but Jen Jackson's been going really well. I'm not totally sure if Catherine Pendrell or Sandra Walter are going to be there, but they're always in the mix.
Yeah, I always like to see the mountain bikers there. I mean, Pendrell usually is in the mix, and although I have to say it's going to be tough to beat Mags right now, it seems.
She's just been killing it this year. Other riders to watch for, jumping around categories here, Quinton DeZera. He did well at some local Ontario races. He was 3rd last year. Always Gunnar Holmgren. Watch out for him. He'll be defending his under 23. I'm 90% sure he's defending his under.
I'm pretty sure you're right.
I think he's been quiet lately on the cross front. But
He certainly wasn't quiet last year at Nationals, because he was pretty dominant from what I remember in the race.
Exactly. So I'm excited about that racing, which is coming this weekend. Also, the following weekend, it's Pan Am Championships back in Midland, Ontario.
Silver Goose, right?
Exactly. I don't know why I was hesitant on the name. It's the Silver Goose. And Pan Am Championships are back. Again, familiar names will probably see Ruby West there. Magalie Rochette defending. She has a good chance of doing that. And Michael Vandenham, he was 2nd last year, but his continental competition, such as Curtis White, Kerry Werner, Stephen Hyde, they're all going really well. So I think Vandenham will have a tough time trying to do better than 2nd.
Yeah, that'll be a tough one. It's always interesting to watch the Pan Am. It definitely has a different dynamic than the national race the weekend before, that's for sure. Even being so close together with a lot of the same riders definitely has a different feel to it.
Matt, do you ride the trainer?
Only when it's absolutely necessary.
Right. We are heading into trainer season, so we have some advice from Coach Peter Glassford on how to manage that, how to set your goals for the trainer season, you know, whether you are targeting stuff in the spring, or maybe you're targeting some virtual podiums. On the subject of virtual podiums, as I mentioned earlier, Ed Veal, who's an hour record holder, and he's done gonzo kind of cycling events before, like riding around Forest City Velodrome for 24 hours, went for a virtual distance record. And I talked to him about that.
A virtual distance. So he was stationary riding this whole time.
Exactly.
Wow.
He wasn't going anywhere in real life, but in Pixel Land, he covered hundreds of kilometers.
That's wild. Did he do it all from a Good Life Fitness location?
No, he was in the Venetian in Las Vegas.
Oh, well, that's a much nicer environment.
There you go. All right, but first we hear from Magalie Rochette, Ruby West, Jen Jackson, and Michael Vandenham about some very important cyclocross races here in Canada. This year, the two biggest cyclocross weekends in the country come in November, just like they did in 2018. Also, the venues for these events are a mere 175 kilometers apart. Cyclocross Nationals return once more to Peterborough, Ontario, while the Pan Am Championships are in Midland a week later. To preview both of these events, contributor Molly Herford spoke with four riders, including a defending Pan Am champ and two runners-up who want to win continental titles in their home country.
My name is Magali Rochette, and I race for Specialized Feedback Sports.
You won Pan Ams last year. Are you looking forward to another year at Silver Goose?
Yes, I'm looking forward to it. It was a really fun course last year, and I'll do my best to defend the title. It was a tight battle last year.
I was going to say, I think that was, for me, like the battle of the season.
It was crazy. Yeah, and actually last year, all season with Ellen, we've had really good battles, and really, I mean, it's awesome. Like, as a racer, that's what you want. You want, like, super tight battles. You want someone that will push your limits. And with Ellen, it's special because we have similar strengths, I think. And so, there's no way I can drop her in the technical section. She's really good. I can't really drop her pedaling. I can't really drop her running. Like, we're equally matched in many things, you know. So, it's always great battles. And last year was super tight. And I mean, hopefully it's tight again today. Not today, this year, because
it's fun.
It's really fun.
It's fun to have, like, that, especially, like, the one particular person that you get to kind of duke it out with. I feel like it's really, it gives you more motivation than just, like, everyone. It's more specific.
Yeah, totally.
Hey, I'm Michael Vandenham with Easton Giant, presented by TLC.
Tell me about your feelings on the Nationals course.
About the Nationals course, I really liked the conditions. I have no idea how it would race in the dry. Maybe it would be like a super highway and kind of boring. Maybe it would be really fun. I just have no idea. But the way those conditions played out, with it being sort of snowy and frozen on the pre-ride days and then just melting just enough to make it muddy and slippery on the race day, I don't know that those conditions necessarily like suit me more than it would if it were fast and dry, but it certainly makes the race give us a little bit of like an epic quality to it.
Yeah.
It makes it one to remember.
Yeah. And then this year is the last year Pan Ams will be at Silver Goose, and Silver Goose itself is kind of a questionable future. So how does that feel, like having Pan Ams in its last year in Canada?
Well, I mean, I hope it's not the last year in Canada, even if there's a few years break. I kind of hope that having Pan Ams has made people across the country excited to want to host it again. It, like I was saying, it was such a great experience, because I think that in the U.S., Pan Ams is sometimes overshadowed by Nationals. People get really excited about that. But in Canada, I think that was the big event. Like, Nationals was obviously really important to everybody, but having Pan Ams there and having, you know, a whole pile of really good Canadian performances, including Megalee winning, was such a positive thing for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I quite like that course. I like ones that are maybe a little bit more pedally. That one was pretty twisty, but overall, I think I had a good race. I can't really say anything bad about it. And just that venue with the beach and the big stone steps and the way it was laid out, I thought made it pretty memorable.
Jen Jackson, Easton Giant, presented by Transitions Life Care.
Nationals and Pan Ams are a week apart for Canadians. Is this a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's good for us as Canadians, especially this year having Nationals prior to Pan Ams. I think it'll give more attention to it from the U.S. Most of the North American cross community is in the States, so I think it'll help give us a little bit more exposure and a little bit more hype coming into Pan Ams. You'll, you know, have some newly minted national champions going into that, and, you know, we can't have Nationals much later because, unless you go to, you know, the coast, then there's going to be snow.
Yeah. And then this is the last year for Pan Ams being the Silver Goose race. Is that bittersweet?
Well, I mean, I guess I got to enjoy the 2 years, my first 2 years racing cross, having Pan Ams, like, pretty much in my backyard. I live, like, 25 minutes away. So it's gone really well for me to have the opportunity to race big events just right in my backyard. But I like going new places, checking out new courses. It's a lot of fun for me to go and check out venues. You learn a lot when you go elsewhere, but it has been really cool to come into Cross and have big events in your backyard and lots of friends and family there.
Yeah. So since it is your backyard, do you have any like tips for any of the particularly technical bits on the course?
No, because I'm still so new. I'm learning everything as I go. It's more, I guess, the home course is like the home crowd and the people there. It's everyone that I race, you know, mountain bikes with all summer and the nightly series and even the provincial circuit and people I know through the shop that I work at. So it's just, and it's easy for other friends who don't necessarily race so much to come out and support the event.
My name's Ruby West, and I race for the Pivot Maxis powered by Stan Snow Tubes team.
Pan Ams and Nationals being like back to back. Are you happy about that, or is that like, ugh?
It's a little bit weird, but I think at the end of the day, it's a good thing for the form because Nationals for us is so early. It's nice to have it kind of sandwiched with Pan Ams to have one peak there, and then you can kind of reset and do a build towards the end of the season. So I think it works out well for us instead of having to just try and maintain that form for a while.
Yeah, and this is the last year Pan Ams are going to be at Silver Goose.
Yeah.
Bittersweet?
Bittersweet for sure, but I think that this year will be a good race. I was second there last year in the under 23 race, so it's a big goal this year. And to win at home would be incredible, so that's a huge goal for me for sure.
Is there anything you're working on like in prep for that, like course-wise?
I haven't been to the course yet. I'll probably go when I get back home. I'm staying home from school the week between Nationals and Pan Am, so hopefully I'll get a bit of time on course there. But just working on my technical skills a lot. I need to. My bike handling's always been a struggle for me, so that's where I fall back. So definitely putting a lot of emphasis on that this year.
Interviewer Molly Herford is a regular contributor to Canadian Cycling Magazine. She's also the author of Shred Girls, a work of young adult fiction featuring a girl named Lindsay who discovers how rad riding bikes can be. I'm close to heading into the pain cave for the rest of the year. You might be too. The opportunities to ride outside are becoming fewer and fewer. If you want to keep up your on-bike fitness, it's time to get out the old trainer. Coach Peter Glassford has some advice on structuring your off-season training, whether you have goals months and months away, or if you are looking to stand on some virtual podiums. Peter, my question for you for this episode is about the trainer. My season, let's say, is done. I'm not going to race any more cross, maybe, likely. And I'm going to put my bike on the trainer. So let's say this is the end of the season. What should I be doing on the trainer? What kind of workouts should I be looking at?
Well, I like that you're thinking that. You know, the weather starts turning. It's good to have options as far as what we can do, as far as our training, our exercise. So the first thing is definitely, get your bike set up, get that sort of pain cave set up so that you're all good to go. The other thing that just I'll sort of bring you back a little bit is you want to make sure after you finish that race season, maybe you've done cyclocross or some hard sort of marathon or gravel or even just really hitting group rides hard into the fall. You want to just make sure that you sort of take some time off, right? And I think a lot of people think it's like months off, but in general, we'll train year round. It just the focus of that changes, right? And I think the mistake sometimes people make is they go so hard that they need to take, you know, just mentally, if not physically, need to take like a month or three off, right? They're just so burnt on it. So rather than that, I just take like, you know, a week sort of honest off your main sport. And then start easing back, right? Just maybe a couple easy spins. If it has to be on the trainer, great. It could also be outside, just very easy. Maybe phasing in some strength training, yoga, whatever type of movement practice you're going to do off bike. More and more, I try and get cyclists out walking. Just flat ground walking would be great. And just sort of start back into what we might call like a base one, right? Like just general aerobic conditioning. And just trying not to be on your limit, right? Like you see so many people, you know, they've had a tough season and it's like they're hitting like max heart rate like every day, right? Like just blowing over that every day, something hard, but like never excessive in that like they're doing intervals, just like going hard. So giving your body just a break for, and that could be a whole nother month really of just sort of easy. And that could be a couple short, easy spins, maybe working on some coordination or something. But that would be how I would look at sort of that first month even after, is sort of just recover and then ease back into maybe what we call a transition period.
What if my goals are winter focused? Because I'm thinking of virtual racing, which has definitely become a bigger and bigger thing. And now we have this traditional off season turned into another racing season, especially if people are going for, virtual podiums. How should I structure my workouts if I have digital goals?
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll build in a few caveats that, like, hopefully you didn't race like, you know, several seasons already, and maybe you've taken a few breaks during the season. Like often after mountain bike nationals in the end of July, we'll just take sort of this transition or sort of off week. People go to the cottage, maybe just as a mental recharge, if not also just let that body recover, right? And it's unnerving for people to do that in the summer, but sometimes that's nice. So we ideally would do the same thing just at the end of a block or a season, right? That's your A race. And then usually after an A race, if you've done it well, you're pretty burnt, right? Like you've really pushed the limit. So you want to recover. So I think my advice would still be to take sort of a recovery recharge week, get the bike set up, you know, get your subscriptions for any of these online things figured out. And I think, you know, really we can joke about the online stuff and you may be right, that may be the future, but there's also fat biking now. There's, you know, cyclocross in the States goes much later. I have a bunch of clients that go over for sort of either cyclocross in the States or even to Europe for different stuff. And then you have early stage races for mountain biking, right? Like I think still the Trans Andes or one of those ones is pretty early. Things like the Cape Epic is relatively early. People do all sorts of crazy stuff, right? So I think having that sort of mid-winter goal, that could be snowshoe race, fat bike race, running race. There's all sorts of different stuff, right? So I think that's good just to give yourself sort of a mid-season sort of like benchmarking thing. So let's assume you have a couple months then, right? Then it's just, you know, again, that week off, 2 weeks off, you're going to be so amped to ride, especially on the trainer, right? You're going to be, you know, a little more motivated to do that. And then you just get back and you just, again, it doesn't have to be complex training. You pick what you need to work on, you know, maybe goal specific. It could be also physiological. If you know, you sort of need an aerobic rebuild, maybe you're doing a bit of, you know, sort of more endurance tempo type stuff. But if you know, okay, I'm coming into like something that's really going to be aggressive, then you can certainly, you know, just in your traditional sense, sort of periodize or plan towards that specific demand, right? And sort of build towards that.
Great advice, Peter. Thank you very much. Peter Glassford is a professional coach and head of Smart Athlete Coaching Services. Send in your Ask a Coach questions for Peter to podcast@cyclingmagazine.ca. Ed Veal is no stranger to cycling records. In February of this year, he rode 5,249 laps on a 138-meter velodrome. He's also the Canadian hour record holder and the world hour record holder in the 40 to 44 age category. On October 22nd, in Las Vegas, he went for another far-out goal, riding 1,000 kilometers in Zwift. I spoke with Veal 6 days after he climbed off his bike in Vegas. Ed Veal, what did you get yourself into on October 22nd?
I got myself into staring at a wall, sitting on a indoor trainer for 20 hours straight. 24 hours straight.
Wow, the experience was so traumatic, you've shortened it. I will get into the length of time in a second. You were staring at pixels, I believe, because you were riding in Zwift, that's correct?
Yes, yeah.
But where were you physically, IRL, as they say, in real life?
In real life, I was in Las Vegas, Nevada at the Venetian Hotel, which is part of like the Palazzo. It's like a big complex, but I was at the Splunk conference, 2019 conference.
So you're at this IT industry event in the Venetian, and you're riding Zwift. Tell me who else was around you. What was the infrastructure like around your setup?
Okay, well, if you imagine just a big trade show, you know, bike show-esque, where there's all these, you know, kind of vendors, all these different people showcasing what they do, businesses and so forth. And so this conference attracts, this particular one had 11,000 people in attendance. So there was... I was up on stage on a bike, you know, on Zwift with three bikes to my left and three bikes to my right. So there was seven of us. Zwift had their computers in front of us, so we were all watching the Zwift platform. But on top of that, on a wall, all of Splunk's data was up on display as well. So they were showing everybody that was, you know, in the vicinity, what we were doing, the distance traveled, if we were ahead of pace, if we're below pace, you know, what my heart rate was. They had a map of where, you know, virtually, like where if I had started in San Francisco, you know, how far I was going to travel across the U.S. So it was pretty cool.
You were after a 24-hour distance record in Zwiftland. What kind of pace did you want to maintain for that 24 hours?
Well, we had a lofty goal set for us at 1,000 kilometers for the 24-hour period. So that worked out to be 41.6 kilometers per hour for 24 hours. So you know, if anybody knows, that's really crazy. So even just to take the start and give this a shot, we knew this was going to be something extremely hard, and so in order to do that, the pacing had to be, you know, executed perfectly. And I, you know, with all the testing I do here in the house and all the Zwift riding I do, I got it down to somewhere between 220 to 230 watts. If I could roll at, you know, 3 watts per kilogram or just below for the entire 24-hour period, I'd be able to, you know, just meet the mark, or, you know, get close anyways.
1,000 kilometers strikes me as pretty bonkers. Just to give a bit more context to that, you are the Canadian distance record holder already for a ride you did in February on the Forest City Velodrome, and you covered 735.8 kilometers. And then I believe the outside world record is just short of 900 kilometers. So even in a virtual world, 200 to 100 kilometers seems really daunting.
Yeah. And the absolute world record on the track, it was done on the track, it's 941. So that is, you know, when I think of the ultimate, and the guy that has that record is, you know, the best in the world at these ultra distance events. And he's won RAM, I think, 5 or 6 times. So, yeah, when someone cranked it up and said, hey, can you do 1,000 right out of the, you know, I was like, that's it's impossible. You know, and I was no, I can't. You know, and I was wanting to be very clear. And then as we started going, you know, talking, I with our crew and that, I was like, are you okay if we miss the mark? You know, I said, I'm okay to try, and I have no problem failing. I want to go till I blow. And, you know, I said, I'll give this, I promised everybody, I'm not mailing it in any way, and I will try my best to get 1,000. But I had to let them all know that this was, as you know, it was impossible. That's how I felt. But as it got going, I was thinking, okay, well, maybe I'm thinking too small, or maybe I needed this. Maybe I needed this lofty goal to shoot for, because then we would actually hit what we were possible, you know, what we were could accomplish. And so, yeah, it became like a rallying point for everybody to say, you know, let's do this. So, but yeah, unfortunately, you know, we did miss the 1,000 kilometers, but, I don't think there was anyone of the group that didn't think we won, you know, that we weren't successful. And I do believe the number that we hit was more than any one of us thought, you know, we were actually going to do, like, realistically.
And what is that number exactly?
952.6 kilometers.
So that's around 10 kilometers more than the official track record. So that's a good chunk of digital distance.
The cool thing about the platform is it is very realistic, and the speeds are very realistic. The advantages to Zwift are the draft, okay? So, and everyone knows that. Anyone that uses the platform, if they race on it or do group rides, the blob effect, as they call it, is pretty wild. So you get 20, 30, 50, 100 people rolling around in this big blob, and you can do some magical things that you really can't do on the road. But if you're not part of that blob and you're just rolling on your own, I find it faster outside. Like, I can actually do better distance outside or on the track. So it was kind of like, you know, if I could surround myself with people and there was always people to help, then maybe 41.6 was, you know, was possible, you know. But if we were had lengths of time where I was left alone, or, you know, I was out in the wind, or I was just under my own power, you know, there's no way we're possibly hitting this mark.
So tell me more about how much digital support you had. How big was this Peloton or blob at some points?
Well, right out of at the start, I'd called all friends and family, and, you know, coaching clients and teammates and anybody that was, you know, I'd ever seen on Zwift. You know, I tried to let them know, hey, could you please, you know, if you can give me whatever you got, jump in. And so when the ride started, it was pretty overwhelming to see, you know, probably 20 people sitting there at the start ready to go. And so as soon as we rolled off, to have that 20 people, you know, I was thinking, wow, you know, this is it's 6 p.m. They rushed home from work. They made this a priority, and now they're going to ride. And then what was kept happening and what was really overwhelming was every time someone left, let's say they rode for an hour or more, they'd say, hey, this is all I can give today, but I'll try to be back tomorrow. And so, you know, I'm saying bye to people and saying thank you for, you know, whatever, you know. And then a lot of people say, hey, I can only do this so much, and I'm going to contact everybody in my, you know, Zwift team, or I'm going to contact the people I know in Australia, or I'm going to, and that was I was just like, this is really happening. Like, people are calling out all their friends and their circle to come back and give me a hand. Cause knowing, I'm in Pacific Standard Time. A lot of my contacts are in the Eastern Standard Time. So they were going to bed, at 10 o'clock, right? I still had, you know, I've only been on the bike for 4 hours, right? So what was amazing is people would show up to the ride and say, so-and-so told me you're doing this ride, you know, I'm here to help, you know, tell me how can I help, or I'll give you whatever I have. And that went on and on and on the entire ride.
Was there any point where you didn't have people around you?
Yeah, there was two critical moments where I was by myself and the pace dropped considerably. And that's when I really had to work hard. So that whole 3 watts per kilogram went out the window and I had to crank it up because, you know, in the draft, you know, I was fine rolling at my set, pace. But as soon as there was no one around, you know, I 230 watts, like I'm rolling at like 35, 36 kilometers an hour. So everything that we earned, you know, I would lose. But you know, it didn't last that long. And what was amazing is that, with the bikes in the building, people could jump on live beside me and in jeans and a t-shirt and try to give me a 10-minute pull or whatever they had. And so we had all the Splunk staff, all the Trek Segfredo, support. We had like, you know, a couple of the guys walking by, like, you know, we'd say, hey, you know, give us what we have. So in those lean times, people tried their best to, you know, give whatever they had. But I got to say, what was amazing was because we were going so strong, almost everybody couldn't last. They were really getting a perspective of how hard it was and how fast we were traveling, because they really could only pull for 10 minutes or they really could only hang on for a couple minutes. Right. So it was pretty cool. And then, you know, we did that enough that, you know, then one guy showed up and he was rolling about 4 watts per kilogram. And then I could tell everybody, I was like, hey, he's here for an hour. And then hopefully in that hour, someone else comes. And that's what happened. And then the blob started to build back up again. Splunk afterwards, because they're a data company and could collect all this awesome data, they had afterwards said there was 260 riders that took part in the building. So I thought that was amazing. So think of that, 260 people rode beside me through that 24-hour period. Now, online, we haven't got the number yet, but I know it's it's got to be double or even triple. Like I know it's hundreds, but I would really love to know the exact number of unique riders that join me on that ride. And so when you're in the dark moments, or you know, it's, you know, 4 a.m, you know, and you still got so, you know, get 10 hours to go. I mean, these are the people that you could never let down. And it was fuel. It was like extremely overwhelming. I was very emotional. Every time someone joined or said thank you, they were thanking me because they were wanted to be a part of it. And they were so happy they were a part of it. I was like, this is pretty big. You know, this is pretty special.
What was your darkest hour mentally during the 24 hours?
I had a lot, but if you can picture this, you're in this huge trade hall auditorium thing, you know, and everyone's gone home. Okay. So it went from being lit, like completely buzzing. You got all these different exhibitors and like, it was just loud and stuff going off all the time. And then slowly they all trickle out and then it's just a complete ghost town. Okay. So we're okay with that. It's still bright. You know, it's Las Vegas. So, I mean, you know, things are rolling, but then all the lights started to go off. And it was on a timer. So one by one, it was like click, boom, click, click, click. And then all of a sudden we're in complete darkness. We're yelling, going like, yo, we're still in here. But it's automated. And so from 4 a.m. to 6 a.m., we did this as a team in darkness. And so I got to say, that was about as mean as you can get. I remember thinking like we needed this, this wasn't hard enough, you know, and now we're in the dark. So yeah, that was probably the lowest time. But what was amazing is when the lights started to come back on, it was almost like the sunrise. It was reinvigorating. It really kind of like we did it. We made it. We made it through the dark spots, and now we're on the other side. So it was actually a blessing.
What was your fueling like during this 24 hours?
Well, I'm usually a carburetor, and I always say that people laugh, but it's the truth. I have an iron gut, and it's a gift. When I think of like as the sport, you know, I usually can eat whatever I want when I want, and you know, I eat right before I get on a bike. People are like, "What?" You know, like yeah. But this time, so we planned for that, but I also told everybody, "Hey, you never know, I could have an upset stomach," you know, and so I wanted to make sure I was eating constantly. I had an idea of like always having something in my mouth every 20 minutes. We were going to eat, you know, I was going to be drinking continuously. I had a whole buffet of food, but I had an upset stomach and probably the worst upset stomach I didn't even realize I could have. Like nothing appealed to me, and almost everything gave me like a gag reflex almost. So we had to it was kind of all hands on deck to think out of the box. And I had people running all over the place to get me whatever was something that was appealing me for the second that, you know, I kind of wanted food. But yeah, I would say 80% of what I took in was liquids and the calories from like in different mixes and so forth. But yeah, nothing solid was going down I really struggled with eating.
Which is harder mentally, an hour record attempt or a 24-hour record attempt? And I ask that because you are the Canadian hour record holder, and you're also the world record holder for the age group 40 to 44. So you have experience with these hour events, but you also have ridden for 24 hours on a track. You've ridden 24 hours in Zwift. Yeah, which is harder mentally?
That's a good question. They are similar because you know, pacing is a massive part of both of them. They're both really hard. I gotta go harder mentally. Jeez. It's a tie. They're both ridiculously hard. I can't give one the other. Yeah, I would say the only thing I would say I would give the nudge to the 24 hour maybe being a hair easier is that with more time you can make a couple more mistakes. Like the shorter the event, the less you can make mistakes. Okay, so I would, you know, like you hopefully with 24 hours, if you screw up something, you can kind of make up for it because you have time, right? But you know, with an hour, it's less, and then you know, obviously, I did the 4K pursuit forever. Like it's 4 minutes, you know, like it's 4K. Like you can't make any mistakes. Mm-hmm. So So I would say that's the only difference. But obviously the intensity in the hour is through the roof, you know, but it's still, you know, all about pacing. But, you know, the 24 hour, like we have all kinds of different things that went well and didn't go well. And we, you know, you need a real support crew. Okay, here we go. The mental game is harder with the 24. I'm going to make a call because you have to rely on more than just yourself. So with the 24-hour, there was a real team effort and a lot of unknowns with the people that I was with and all the support that I was going to get online. So I would say I didn't sleep as well because I couldn't control all the variables. I could only control what I could bring to the table. With the hour, I could actually control most of the variables and it was generally all on me. So, you know, it was much easier to manage, if that makes sense.
We're speaking roughly 6 days after you finished your ride and yeah. that you clocked in that 952.6 kilometers. What is the status of that result right now?
Well, it's it's a Zwift 24-hour distance record, but we are waiting to hear from Guinness, the Guinness Book of World Records, on if they will overturn a decision to make, you know, the 1,000 kilometer mark the mark. But yeah, I'm happy of what we did, and I'm actually really confident that this will be an official Guinness World Record.
And there were Guinness judges on site during your attempt. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was great. They were there to make sure everything was calibrated, everything was like no one else was riding the bike, that we did everything officially. And so, yeah, there was three judges all doing 8-hour shifts. So they were, you know, caffeinated and awake. And yeah, they were great, taking all kinds of notes, asking great questions. It was a good experience.
It was an endurance test for more than just you, for the judges, for your crew.
Yes.
So what is next for you? You've done a few 24 hours, you've done the hour. What's next? And I, in your repertoire, and I say this with affection, of gonzo cycling attempts.
Yeah, there's you, Matt, man, you, as soon as I got off the bike, someone asked me this question. I'm like, too soon.
Well, I'm giving you 6 days before.
Yeah, I love it. No, it's funny. Even the day after, I started to have, it started to come to me and I had a big smile on my face. 2 days after, I said to the guys there, I was like, they asked me if I would do the whole conference next year, if I would ride for the 4 days straight and set the absolute Zwift distance record. And so, I mean, I'm being pitched things all the time. I'm really open to these. I love challenges, especially when there's a cause attached. So I would say right now we're, you know, the first thing on my mind right now is I'm started piloting a tandem again. So we're going to be competing at the me and my stoker Lowell Taylor. We're going to be competing at the World Championships in Milton in January. So it's all tandem, and really try and make a run for the Tokyo Olympics. So that's the freshest thing. I would say as far as like a stunt or something in this realm, the land speed record is something that I would love to take a crack at. And then I would say the, you know, ultra distance stuff, like, or, you know, getting in like on a recumbent in like one of those, you know, pill shaped, you know, aerodynamic things and trying to set a land speed record with that style as well is something that really excites me too.
One of those land speed formats involves a motorized vehicle, doesn't it? Can you tell us a bit how that one works?
Well, I'm new to this, so, you know, and it's not for everybody. I know when I mentioned to my mother, she pretty much cried and then tried to swing at me. Don't do this to me, is what she. But you get behind, you know, a drag car, like something that can go a high speed. It's got all the fairings to protect you. You're attached to the vehicle. It slowly winds it up until you're doing, you know, in excess or close to about 300 miles an hour. And then it sets you free, and then you've got to stay behind the vehicle and try and hold that pace for a minute. If you can hold that pace, or whatever pace you hold for, you know, that's the recorded land speed record.
Hang on. Ed, thank you very much, and we look forward to following your adventures.
Thank you, Matt. Appreciate it.
Ed Veal of Hamilton, Ontario, recently rode 952.6 kilometers within the virtual world of Zwift. Currently, he's waiting to have that number logged as a Guinness World Record. And that's the episode. It's put together by me, Matthew Piaro, and Matt Stetson. We had help from Terry McCall. It's produced by Adam Killick. He also composed the music. Also, special thanks to Ontario Creates for its support. Matt, where can people go if they want to find out more about what we're up to here at Canadian Cycling?
If you're looking for the podcast or lots of other great content, you can visit the website at cyclingmagazine.ca. And don't forget to keep an eye on our social channels via Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And what would I do if I like something like this podcast that we're just doing now?
If you happen to like this podcast, you should rate it with 5 stars, please. That helps us out a lot. And please also leave a nice comment. Send us your letters, your comments. That'd be super helpful. Thank you. And also, if you find yourself in Peterborough this first weekend of November, say hi. I'm going to be there running around with a microphone and field recorder. So yeah, love to hear from you. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you, Matt.
We'll talk to you later.